This hour of the Jason Rant Show is brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So if you're returning from Thanksgiving travel, spend some time with your in-laws, with your family members, either here in Washington State, maybe you went down to Vancouver, maybe you stayed in the Pacific Northwest, maybe you went hang out in Cleveland, Miami, Austin, wherever, you are told that you're supposed to quarantine for 14 days. In fact, if you traveled by plane, you are welcomed home with that message at SeaTac Airport. 14 days, you need to be in quarantine. Robert from Marysville told Cairo 7 TV that he knew traveling for Thanksgiving was going to be risky, but he wasn't scared.
About my own safety, not so much. But when it came to like my parents and stuff, I recommended that they don't travel, and they didn't come to the Thanksgiving that we were having in Indiana.
Kind of sounds like he just didn't want mom and dad to come visit. Because from now on, we have forever and ever and ever a built-in excuse to say no to family members. I would really, Mom, I would love to have you over for Thanksgiving. It's just, I love you too much to risk you getting COVID. No. I know you've gotten the vaccine, but I could not live with myself knowing that you got COVID just traveling for just some turkey. Don't worry, I'll visit you for Christmas. Yes, of course, there's also a risk of me bringing in COVID to you when I visit you, but let's cross that bridge when we get there. Next time. Promise, I swear. Despite COVID, of course, people were still traveling. And apparently at least a lot in the context of what was expected. Not like normal, not what they normally see during a Thanksgiving break, but more than expected, given we're in the middle of a pandemic. Between 800,000 and 1 million people or so traveled through airports per day. Wednesday was the highest with a little over 1 million. Brenna, a UW junior gymnast, was one of them.
I felt really safe on the flight. They wiped down everything. I had my sanitizer. I doubled up on masks when I was on the plane. So it was good for me, and I felt safe with everyone else.
As long as you feel safe, it's all good. But it does mean that cases are likely going to continue to rise. Now, not necessarily the death rate, but cases will rise. We know that that's going to happen because we know that the pandemic is due to a virus that is incredibly contagious. We have not reached herd immunity. Now, we can argue why that is all we want, but we know that we haven't reached herd immunity, which means it's going to spread, which means it has spread. In fact, over the holiday weekend, and by the way, this is older data because everything is delayed, but we had about 100,000 new cases a day nationally, okay? 100,000 cases a day nationally, and that was during the holiday weekend. So that did not account for the people who maybe caught it while traveling. So that is, of course, a staggeringly high number.
Because winter is working against us and we're seeing a surge of cases.
We're seeing a surge of cases because winter is working against us. That is Dr. Ali Mokhtad. He's a chief strategist over at the UW's Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, IHME. He spoke to Cairo 7 TV. He shared some of the quote-unquote sobering national statistics from Saturday.
91,600 people for COVID-19 in hospitals, 18,000 on ICUs yesterday, and 6,150 on ventilators.
So, like so many others, they're raising the alarms over the hospitalizations. And again, regionally, it kind of depends on where you are. Regionally, things look a little bit different. Things in Snohomish County are going to look different than Klickitat County. Things in Washington will look different than things in Florida. Not every region is exactly the same. Not every city or state are exactly the same. But I do think we're at a point in this pandemic that folks know enough about the coronavirus and the risks that they are willing to take risks on their own. They're willing to do what they believe to be right. And there's only so much you can do to get in their way. Yet you can go ahead and start closing down businesses all you want. That will have obviously some effect. The restaurants that stay closed will obviously not be spreaders at all. Although, remember, the data, at least here in Washington State and really across the country, show restaurants weren't spreading the disease, period. Or very, very low numbers. But obviously that has some effect in stopping the spread of the coronavirus. But for the most part, when left to their own devices, people are going to make decisions on their own. So the question here becomes, are people really going to quarantine for 14 days? Now, our friend Robert from Marysville is going to.
Because I chose to go out or to leave the state, I knew that I was going to have to quarantine when I came.
So he knew it. He got mentally prepared. It's obviously easier to quarantine if you work from home. Maybe Robert is in that position. So if you're already basically quarantined because you're working from your home office, obviously you can get away with something like that. And I do think that the mitigation that is sort of built into the situation that we all find ourselves in, or a lot of people find themselves in, will cut down on the risk of spread. Now, at the same time, we got some significant news today on the vaccine front. Moderna came out. They released their final results of their vaccine. And somehow, out of 30,000 people in their trial, only 11 got the two doses and then ended up getting COVID and experiencing symptoms, mild symptoms. Only 11. Their efficacy rate all in was something like 94.1%, which is in line with the other vaccines. But what's more astonishing, it has a 100% efficacy rate against severe COVID reactions. Not a single person in the 30,000 person trial ended up severely sick with the coronavirus. Now, doctors will note that these are still small trials, relatively speaking, obviously relative to a global population. And just because amongst those 30,000, no one had a severe case does not mean that no one will have a severe case in the globe who ends up getting the Moderna virus. But obviously the numbers look very, very good. And it's certainly more in favor of the positive than not. And the more I look at some of these results, the more it's hard to believe how a virus that has ravaged this economy, that has shut down this globe, has changed our lives, had a vaccine developed in just a few months that can defeat it so easily. Because when you compare the efficacy of this particular vaccine to that of the flu, this is way beyond what the flu vaccines are capable of, where you get like a 40 to 60% efficacy rate depending on the flu strain. Because in a lot of ways, whenever I talk to a doctor about the flu vaccine, they always say, hey, you should get it, but it's kind of a shot, pardon the pun, in the dark, where fingers crossed, the strain that ends up spreading is the one that you are going to be protected against. Now, of course, the question becomes, again, who gets the vaccine first? And we're still trying to figure out the details. The healthcare workers obviously are going to get it first. Then we're going to see the push for the race-based decisions. But there's a meeting at the CDC tomorrow to consider who they're going to prioritize. And apparently the obese are on the list because they have a major risk factor for severe symptoms. And a lot of folks aren't really talking about it. A lot of it has to do with the more obese you are, the more the lung capacity is impacted, and COVID attacks your breathing. And so if you're already having breathing problems, if you're already having lung capacity issues, COVID obviously makes it worse. But this does sort of raise an interesting point. So you prioritize the obese, right? Which means essentially you're prioritizing half of the country because half of this country is fat. But you're also reminding people about how silly it was to keep gyms closed, where people stay fit or get fit. Doesn't quite make sense. Now, to be fair, when they're talking about the obese, they're talking about the morbidly obese, the super morbidly obese, people who have a body mass index of over 40. So, for example, for me to get above 40 BMI, I'd have to weigh, I'm 6'1.5", 6'2". I'd have to weigh above 300 pounds for me to qualify. So we are talking about people who are very, very, very overweight. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text message. forget, I will be on Tucker Carlson tonight, the video of which will be available around 6:15 at facebook.com/JasonRantsShow or twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Crime.
So just a quick reminder on this Cyber Monday where I spent way too much money on so-called Cyber Monday deals. This is the internet's reaction to Black Friday, where all of the companies that are already online and already ordering these deals just essentially, or offer these deals, just essentially extend their Black Friday into Monday and they just call it something different. But now's a good time to remind folks that about this time of year, we start to see more and more porch pirates stealing packages from your porches. They come up, they notice that you've got a whole bunch of Amazon boxes or other boxes there, and they just steal them. They don't care what's in them. These are bad people. These are people who just show up and take what's not theirs.
It is 100% always. It's not just this time of year. It's always.
It's always, he says. That is an anonymous UPS delivery driver. But right now, we're seeing an uptick. We always see an uptick. Because the bad guys know that you're buying a whole bunch of stuff online. They know that you, like me, got inundated with emails about Cyber Monday deals. Maybe you, like me, got exactly, let me do the math. Divided by 12 times 2, divided by pi times 5, divided by 3. I got 14,000 emails from Express for Men telling me about their Cyber Monday deal. Up to 60% off already low prices. We got it. So what can you do to protect yourself?
Say that you want it delivered behind your house or you need a signature required. I mean, there's a lot of ways around it.
Well, I'm not doing any of that. I mean, I don't have to because I have a secure locker and mailbox in a secure apartment complex. But y'all have to figure it out. If you go into the office, just have the packages mailed there. And if not, just buy from places that have very, very good policies where you can just report stuff that were stolen and they'll immediately just replace it, almost no questions asked. That's been my experience with Amazon. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
There was no Apple Cup this year, canceled over concerns via COVID, but that didn't stop Kappa Sigma fraternity chapters at UW and Wazoo from their annual Apple Cup run, where they run a football between Seattle and Pullman to raise money for military and veterans groups. Joining me on the line to discuss their success is Kieran Matthews. He's president of the UW's Kappa Sigma chapter. Kieran, welcome to the show.
Hey.
So, no Apple Cup, still Apple run went on. How'd it go?
It was a great event. We ran over 300 miles, split up between 35 members. So about 10 miles per member. It was a very good event.
So, of course, why run 300 miles when you can write a check?
It's more to show how much we support the veterans and their cause, to show our support for them, how we want to actually help them.
Mm-hmm. What were the organizations that you backed?
So our Military Heroes campaign supports beneficiaries like the SEAL Legacy Foundation, Veterans Moving Forward, Catch a Lift, and many more.
Nice. And you guys actually ran. You didn't cheat and do it digitally.
No, we actually ran.
Which part did you run?
So I did the first part, which was from here to Sultan. And we have a group of four guys in the car. And we keep switching off, running about 2 to maybe 4 miles, and then we alternate between each other so we get some rest in between.
So, what from Seattle to Sultan? Because you're not running on the freeway, right?
So for the most part, the first leg that's from Seattle to Sultan is on a trail. So it starts with the Burke-Gilman Trail. Then the Sammamish River Trail, mm-hmm. and then we go on the Tote Pipeline, and from there on, we start running on the highway.
Oh, wow. So, okay, yeah. So from that point, at least it's scenic. How long did it take to do the run?
It took over 3 days to do the run.
Oh my gosh.
3 days.
Three days all in. But I'm assuming you guys weren't running 24 hours, right?
No. So once we get to Salton, the next group takes over the ball and keeps running. So it is throughout. So there are people running at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Jeez. Who got stuck on that? It was probably a younger kid in the frat, right?
Actually, the older guys, our seniors,
really?
Decided to take that. Yep, they crossed the path.
Well, that was dumb. Why'd they take that one? That sounds like the worst one to do.
I honestly, when you're in the moment, it's actually a lot more fun than it sounds.
Oh, well, that's good. I mean, to me, it sounds absolutely miserable. We're talking with Kieran Matthews. He's the president of the UW's Kappa Sigma chapter. We're talking about the Apple Cup run, where they ran a football between Seattle and Pullman to raise money for a whole bunch of different military and veterans causes. How much did you end up raising?
So far, we've raised over $7,500. Our goal is to hit $12,000.
Nice. So what are you going to do between now and the 12,000 to get to that point?
So we've had a few fundraisers, and we are still trying to ask people to help donate to the cause, reaching out through social media and other methods.
I've made it very easy for people. If you guys want to donate to the cause, all you have to do is text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a direct link, and you can give whatever it is you can, whether it's $5 or $500. It gets them closer to that goal. They're not very far off from that $12,000. Text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770. So you're working in tandem with the chapter out in Wazoo, correct?
No.
So this is totally separate.
Usually we will be working with the chapter in WSU, but this year the University of Washington chapter took it all the way. So it's just the University of Washington chapter this year.
Okay. If you didn't have the Apple Cup run, what would that mean between the relationships between the two students and the two fraternity chapters during sort of a normal year of a rivalry?
So depending on how it goes, normally some members may come to the chapter house. We will spend time together. Mm-hmm. During the game, we would definitely be bantering against each other, but otherwise we're still pretty friendly.
Well, frats have gotten a little bit soft then. You're supposed to be pranking each other.
I mean, yeah, definitely. Some pranks every now and then.
Okay, well, you're going to have to do some more pranks, and then I'll donate a little bit more. Should this still count as a loss for Wazoo, since they already kind of suck and they're the reason why the game was canceled to begin with?
Kind of, yeah.
Right? I mean, we'll just go ahead and call it. All my friends over at Wazoo who are listening right now or alumni, you guys aren't the best. You're going to have to earn a couple wins to make up for this. So I'm counting this as another year for a win for UW.
Yeah.
And
I'll
right? In the meantime, if you want to donate to a cause that is really bigger than ourselves, text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770. Kieran Matthews, best of luck in getting to that $12,000 goal. I appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Don't forget, I'll be on Tucker Carlson later tonight. If you want to watch that video, check us out at twitter.com/JasonRants. When we come back, we're going to dive into a crazy story out of the city of Edmonds and Woodway, where extremist squatters are trying to get into some people's waterfront properties. What's going on? We'll tell you. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show right here on AM 770 KTTH. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. I was on Fox News earlier this morning. In fact, I was also on yesterday, and I'm on tonight on Fox News, all to talk about something that's been going on in the city of Edmonds. In Edmonds, you've got essentially extremists who are squatters who are wandering around town, going to waterfront property, and trying to convince people that they own the homes that the homeowners know that they rightfully own. But I imagine when you get someone knocking on your door taking this particular position, including showing you fraudulent documents, it could be a little bit alarming, maybe even scary, maybe even comical, I suppose. But it's happening right now in Edmonds and Woodway. So this morning on America's Newsroom, I chatted about it.
Well, police in Seattle and its surrounding suburbs are reportedly warning homeowners about this group that's going around knocking on people's doors in luxury waterfront locations there. The people produce these official-looking documents which claim they are the rightful owners of those properties where they're knocking on doors. Investigators say these people are part of the so-called sovereign citizens movement, and they have been known to operate in other parts of the country, too. Their group believes that they own all of the land between Alaska and Argentina and all the islands in between. Unfortunately, Edmonds, Seattle, falls between that land. We're joined by Jason Rantz. He's the host of the Jason Rantz Show on KTTH Radio in Seattle. So, Jason, this is happening in other places, not just Seattle. We're hearing instances of this in North Carolina, even here on the East Coast in Maryland. So what is this? I mean, aside from it sounding like pretty much every American's worst nightmare, what are we dealing with?
Yeah. I mean, it does really sound like it's coming from a horror movie. They're the Moorish Sovereign Citizens. They're essentially an extremist squatters group where they go in and they generally target homes that have been recently sold with the intent of squatting. Now, obviously, when they knock on someone's door and someone answers, they have the intent of trying to con their way in to take over the land. They believe that they settled in this land prior to the government being established. Thus, none of the laws actually apply to them. Now, the weird thing about this here, at least in the Seattle area, is that they're not actually breaking any laws. They are polite. They're forceful, but they are polite when they're having conversations with these homeowners that they're trying to dupe. And when they're told to leave, they leave the property. And so the police are basically just keeping an eye on them. The FBI is involved. They're aware of what's going on, mostly because when there is an empty home, whether it's in the waterfront of Edmonds or Woodway or wherever it is they're going, they just want to make sure that they're keeping these people out. But as of right now, they haven't gotten violent, which we can't say has not been the case in the past outside of this general area.
Well, that's a real blessing. They haven't gotten violent yet with any of these houses that they're trying to sneak into and squat in. Jason, let's pull up everything we know about this group. So they call themselves the Moorish Sovereign Citizens. We know they were founded in 1990. It's estimated there are about 3,000 to 4,000 followers in this group all across the United States. And as you mentioned, Jason, they believe that because they're part of this so-called sovereign nation, they're immune from most U.S. laws. Now, the Southern Poverty Law Center, Jason, we also know, has labeled them an extremist group, which honestly sounds a little bit more accurate, right? I mean, these are people that are trying to steal other Americans' homes.
Yeah, I mean, they're crazy people. I mean, that's what we would generally call someone who knocks on our doors and demands that they somehow own land that we obviously know they don't. And so, yes, are they an extremist group in the sense that they pose a direct threat? Not in this instance, certainly not yet. But I think there's reasonable concern that if you're a homeowner who does feel threatened by some weirdo who's coming up to your door and demanding that you leave, if you're someone who's armed, you might grab that weapon to defend your house. And so, again, that's part of the reason why we're spending so much time on this, getting this story out there. It's not necessarily new for this region, just because we've had instances of this happening over the years. And again, generally, it's figured itself out. But, no one's expecting that knock at their front door and having to encounter people who are making these kinds of claims. But in a lot of ways, it's very peak 2020. I mean, of all the years that we're going to get these kinds of stories, 2020 seems like the right one.
Jason, do you have any advice for those of us who are just hearing about this for the first time? People who might be worried about this happening in their neighborhood or in their state, how to respond? Like, let's say these Moorish sovereign citizens show up at your house door tomorrow. What do you recommend you say to them to kind of move them along and get them out of there with any kind of incident?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually really simple. Tell them that they have to leave your property, that they are trespassing, and that you are calling the police, and then actually call the police. They're not allowed to be there. In cases here in Edmonds, what they decided to do after they called police, police actually made contact with at least two of the members of the group, and they served them with criminal trespass warnings. So now if they were to come back to that home and bother the homeowner again, they actually are breaking the law under Washington state law, and they can, in fact, be arrested. And as far as the reporting goes, they're aware of that, and which is kind of weird because they say none of the laws apply to them. They're not returning home to the homes in which they've got criminal trespass orders against them.
It's an interesting take on the way stuff is supposed to work, but you give us some good advice there. You want to build a police record if you have interactions with these people so they know how to help you. Jason Rantz in Seattle, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jillian.
So the video of that is available right now at twitter.com/JasonRantz. But it was interesting because, you know, just last week on the Dory Monson show on our sister station, Cairo Radio, Doria talked with a sergeant out at the Edmonds Police Department. And just listening to the way this scam or delusion, I suppose it depends on how you want to look at it, how it ends up playing itself out is just so bizarre.
Essentially, they're saying that we were here first, we decided to leave, we've come back, and this is our land, and this is our house, and you know, we're taking it. If there's any resistance to them, they kind of continue to spew their beliefs, but they will leave when asked, especially if it's made clear that law enforcement is coming.
And so that's to me makes it a little bit comical, this idea that you've got a group of folks who do not believe laws apply to them, but the second you tell them you're calling the cops, then they leave. And weirdly, when they've had conversations with cops, apparently they've been very polite.
They're breaking state laws if they don't leave the property when asked, and that would be the crime of trespass. But so far, they've all left the property when asked. The most recent time we made contact with two subjects, one had been seen at a couple of different locations, and they were issued criminal trespass notices for those specific locations, making it clear that if they returned, they would be subject to arrest. And in our agency communication, we've made it clear that if you encounter these people and they are committing a violation of the law, to enforce that law, whether that be through citation or physical arrest.
It is... So weird. It is so weird. Now, the funny thing is, as the story started to gain national and international attention, because this was actually reported in the Daily Mail, which is, I believe, how Fox News first heard about it, at least Fox and Friends over the weekend, when they had invited me on. I was on yesterday morning. They had shared with me an article that they saw in the Daily Mail. You know, I had this vague recollection of this group operating in a similar capacity in previous years. I couldn't remember if it was specifically in Snohomish County or not, but I remember a similar story in the past. Turns out, yeah, my memory was pretty good. This is not a group that's new to the region.
I know in talking to the chief a little bit earlier this morning, this group's been around for a few years. They've laid some of these claims to some other governmental jurisdictions as well, Snohomish County themselves, and some other jurisdictions within Snohomish County. So this isn't the first time they've popped up for us. This is just the most recent time. Thus far, we have not had anybody, say, okay, I'll move out.
Not to make too much light of this, because I imagine it could be a scary or creepy scenario for you to encounter, for me to encounter, but they did pick an interesting city, right? I mean, they did pick good land. Waterfront property in Edmonds, in Woodway. That's actually really good. You avoid all of the downsides of living in Seattle. You avoid the crime and the filth, right? You don't have to deal with I-5 traffic in DuPont, so you're skipping out of DuPont. You can get a whole lot of land with little resistance, I suppose, in Squim, but it's kind of far out of the way. I suppose if you're looking for the mansions, the waterfront property, you can go into Medina, but then you're surrounded by a whole bunch of neighbors who are just self-loathing liberals. So going into Edmonds, you know, you kind of still got some of the self-loathing liberals there, but you also get the Snohomish County conservatism, and I don't know. I feel like they kind of picked, they made the right choice. If they were going to choose any particular city, they chose the right one. If you're listening to the Jason Ranch, and don't forget, I'll be talking about the same topic with Tucker Carlson later this evening. If you want to watch it, you can check out the video. It will be available around 6:15 over at facebook.com/Jason Rants Show, or better yet, give me a follow at twitter.com/Jason Rants. When we come back, Mayor Dana Ralph of the city of Kent's going to stop by. They are reopening the Econo Lodge for COVID patients who are homeless. Will it work this time? I'll ask the mayor. To the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The Econo Lodge in Kent is back in the news. Usually that's not good news. In this case, we'll see. Obviously, we're going through a surge in coronavirus cases here in Washington State, and the county, King County, decided to reopen the Econo Lodge as a quarantine and isolation center for homeless people who have either been exposed to the coronavirus or are dealing with the coronavirus, and they have no other place to go. Now, the last time we talked about the Econo Lodge, it had to do with all of the issues concerning the community, saying that there was a rise in crime, that staffing was not adequate enough, and that folks who were presumed to have COVID were just kind of hanging out, leaving whenever it is they wanted. We've had many times over the course of that controversy, Mayor of Kent, Dana Ralph, on the show to discuss it. So we thought we would check in to see how she's feeling now that they are reopening it. Joining me on the line is Mayor Dana Ralph. Welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Is there reason to believe that this time it will be different than last time?
So we've been working with King County now. Wow, it's been since the end of February, on getting plans in place, and we do have a better assurance as they're taking the, the facility's been in what they've been calling warm status, so never completely closed, just not had anybody there, that their staffing levels are better, working with the people that they're, the folks that are staying there closer to help them get through that first couple of days. If you think about, especially the homeless folks that are staying there, you know, it's a big transition to go from being outside to being inside in a small space. And we've been working with King County, and they've assured us that they've got staffing in place, security in place, and we are definitely more comfortable as we're going through this reopening at this point.
So how have the conversations gone since the early days of the controversy up until, you know, today, as we learned that they're reopening this, or, you know, not reopening technically, but officially launching it as a spot for people to go to and the expectation those rooms get filled?
I think that the easiest way to explain it is that the conversations are happening now. That was one of our biggest issues in the very beginning, is that we were sort of the last ones to know, and we didn't feel like there was good communication at all. I am now getting regular updates, got the heads up that they were going to be reactivating the Kent location just over a week ago. And am grateful that we're finally, it feels like we've found a groove, and we're now talking to each other.
What does the community say? Because obviously you've got some nearby businesses, including at least one, I believe it was a 7-Eleven, that was robbed last time.
So I think initially the concern was when we were first going into COVID, we didn't really understand how it was spread, where it was at in the community, and there was concern about that. I know that the businesses are still concerned about possible criminal activity. It seems like that with the additional security on site, while they can't require anyone to stay there, that there's a better handle on who's coming into the facility and who's leaving.
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of our initial concerns have been addressed.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Mayor Dana Ralph of the city of Kent as the county is set to reuse the Econo Lodge location as a spot for quarantining or isolating homeless people who have either been exposed to the coronavirus or actually have the coronavirus. Is there any concern on your end that this could become, because they can't just keep people in this center, that it becomes a super spreader?
What we're hearing now is they're looking at about 10 people. That this is they're going to 90% capacity at the other two sites. So Kent becomes the third site. We saw one or two people leave last time, so I don't have significant concerns about it creating some kind of a super spreader event in the city at all.
Is the city of Kent, generally speaking, ready if that does happen? Because obviously things are much different between February when we first started talking about this and right now.
So we, just like every other city, we rely on public health for supports when it comes to the virus. That's where the response comes from. Again, with the limited capacity in mm-hmm. there, I am definitely more comfortable than I was good. At the end of February, beginning of March, for sure.
Well, that's certainly good news, because I know you were very concerned in March about the direction that this was all heading. So I'm glad they listened to your concerns. In the minute or so we have left, if you can give us a little bit of an update on where the city stands financially now that some things have changed. You know, Seattle is doing better than they thought they would when it comes to sort of the economic outlook versus Everett and generally Snohomish County looking worse than they thought they would look as a result of the shutdowns and whatnot. Where does Kent stand?
We made some significant cuts early on back in May, and that has stabilized things. As we go into this new round of closures, my biggest concern is for our businesses, especially our small businesses, and their ability to stay afloat as they're being shut down.
What's being done or what can be done?
So we pushed out just over $2 million in small grants to businesses in using some of our CARES money. We're going to continue to work with the governor's office to find safe ways for businesses to remain open, and just encouraging all of our residents to stay safe and help slow the spread until we can get a vaccine.
Do you think the data backs up the decision by the governor to close restaurants and gyms?
I think that I'm frustrated with that closure because the data really talks about it being social gatherings and people inside their homes or at other events. And I feel like this new round of closure disproportionately impacts, especially gyms. I've heard from a dance studio in town that they spent all the money on putting the precautions in place mm-hmm. and now they've been shut down. So I have concern there.
Yeah, get in line with a lot of other people who have expressed the exact same concern. It just doesn't seem like they're using the data or the science that they claim to use when making these decisions. Mayor Dana Ralph of the city of Kent, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget, I was on Tucker Carlson tonight. The video up at twitter.com/JasonRants. We'll have the video up in the next 15 or 20 minutes or so. twitter.com/JasonRants. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.